don't mean to bust your bubble, but girls of the world ain't nothing but trouble. So next time a girl gives you the play, just remember my rhymes and get the hell away.
Well, hello there, folks. It's time for SI Kids, Sports Illustrated Kids. My name is Dick Hayden, and I am going to be filling in for John Ivy today to bring you readings from Sports Kids Illustrated. Sports Illustrated for Kids. Got it? I think I got it right. There we go. The content of this program is for people who are blind and print impaired. And the program is coming to you from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from that article, Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to begin with an article from the, let's see, what edition is this? I think it is the back, it's the concluding edition, number six for 2020. And the article's titled Warm Up. It's under Hot Take. The title, Tear Up the Cheat Sheets. Why isn't every test open book? Well, it's because teachers are mean. Is that right? Yes, but that's not the point. If students could check their notes during quizzes, they would never study, and as a result, they would learn less. Tests let the teacher know how much their pupils have retained. They also challenge skills. Can the test taker formulate an essay from a new prompt? Can they manage their time under pressure? Athletics should be the ultimate test of skills under pressure. Increasingly, however, sports are an open book test. Why should professional athletes be held to a lower standard than fifth grade social studies students? Good point. Anyone who watched the Major League Baseball playoffs this year surely noticed that players are checking their notes out on the field. The baseball uniform is delightfully out of date with its high socks and belt loops. It harkens back to baseball's ancient history as a sport played by mustachioed gentlemen in collared shirts. But the funny little back pockets on the baseball pants, traditionally used to hold sunflower seeds or batting gloves, now house the instrument of the sport's ruination. It's called the alignment chart. The laminated index cards that fielders consult before every at-bat contain instructions on where to stand against every hitter, with additional recommendations based on which hand the pitcher throws with and the count. Fielders adjusting for each batter is nothing new, although shifts have become more frequent and dramatic. Willie Mays famously directed defensive alignments from center field for the Giants. The Say Hey Kid did not, however, require a cheat sheet. Baseball prides itself as a cerebral sport. When fielders carry around cards telling them what to do, it puts players who get by on their guile and knowledge at a disadvantage. Soon hitters will consult little spreadsheets between every pitch, checking for the hurler's go-to in every count. Pitchers have already joined in on the trend. In a 2018 game, umpire Joe West confiscated Phillies hurler Austin Davis's card under Rule 6.02(c)(7). which bans the pitcher from possessing foreign substances. It was designed to prevent things like Vaseline and pine tar used to create a spitball-type effect. West took the attitude of a teacher who promises to give a Game Boy back at the end of the school year. "I know all the players now carry a cheat sheet like this," West said. "I saw him take it out, and I went, 'What the heck is that?' I said, 'You can have it back after the game, but you cannot have it now.'" Unfortunately, Major League Baseball did not support West's interpretation of Rule 6.02, and the crib notes have proliferated. Baseball has rules against the cards showing that slow down games, but some delays seem inevitable. And you know what? It just looks silly. Hulking athletes are reduced to nervous grade schoolers giving book reports every time they stare down at their charts. Let's draw a bright line here that applies to all sports, or better yet, let's use the lines already painted on the field. Sideline studying, iPads, charts, conversations with coaches, that's fine. But once an athlete steps onto the field, they should be left to fend with only their wits and their equipment. That means another famous coaching tool, the football helmet radio, needs to go too. The NFL banned the quarterback coach radio after Browns coach Paul Brown, the team's namesake, and I'm from that area, and I remember when Paul Brown started that team. Yeah, that was some good years. Anyway, after Brown successfully pulled it off in the 1950s, oop, I just gave away my age. 40 years later, the league approved the one-way radio for quarterbacks, and in 2008 for the defensive captain. But the NFL rules tacitly admit it's a cheat. The microphones go dead with 15 seconds left on the play clock. If a quarterback can manage, a quarter minute without his coach's voice in his head, surely he can run the huddle by himself. It's all the better if professional football has to switch to the NCAA trend of plays being relayed from the sideline by non-sequitur meme posts. Imagine Tom Brady shouting this audible over the crowd noise. SpongeBob, Superman, plane emoji, hut, hike! Banning on-field aids may lead to sloppier play in the short term. Quarterbacks will throw more interceptions, and fielders may collide, confused about who covers which base on which shift. In the long run, however, these practices will force athletes to develop their awareness and critical thinking skills. Eventually, this generation's Willie Mays may emerge and a set of good example for kids who choose to learn the finer points of their sports before they reach the highest level. Ultimately, the cheat sheets should be banned for reasons of fairness. No, they're not unfair to the opposing team. They're unfair to me, M-E in capital letters. Mrs. Brahms expects us to memorize all the state capitals in the United States. Do you know how many states have capitals? All of them. But when I ask to consult an index card during the quiz and tell her my heroes in Major League Baseball do it, guess what? I get in trouble. Let's now move on to a section of this issue called warm-up. And in warm-up, we have three different athletes who are going to do a little exploring with them. We have skateboarder Minestes, tennis player Sebastian Cordra, and Arizona Cardinals football cornerback Patrick Peterson. And we've got here on the side the grid. That's the grid for this article. It's not an article. It's just showing what they think. So it's a question, and then each of the individuals have an answer as to what they like, what they prefer. So here on the grid, what's the best present that you ever received? Well, Minestres says, my dog Tallulah. Sebastian Corda said, my first real set of tennis rackets when I was 10. And Patrick Peterson, my watch from my wife. Next up, which is your favorite holiday? Minestres says, Christmas and Hanukkah. Sebastian Corda, he says, Christmas, I start listening to Christmas music in October. And Patrick Peterson, Thanksgiving. I wonder if that's because he's a cornerback and he likes to eat a lot. In fact, they've got a picture of a whole turkey right next to his answer. Next question is, who would you want to play in a movie about your life? Well, Minestres would like to have Emma Watson. And I cannot believe this one. Gang, tennis player Sebastian Corda would like to have Rowan Atkinson. Do you know who that is? That's Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean, the crazy, mimicking, mime type of British character. That's a good one. And Patrick Peterson, the football player, wants to have Will Smith play him. What's been your favorite quarantine activity during the pandemic so far? I'll call it so far because we don't know when that pandemic's going to be over. And by the way, as soon as your parents can get their shots, please urge them to do so and wear their masks. And you wear your mask. And as soon as it's time for you to get your vaccination, you do it too, because that's the best way to be safe. Well, anyway, what's your favorite quarantine activity during the pandemic? Watching Timothy Chalamet movies again and again and again. Okay. Sebastian Corda, he's into Xbox with my buddies and a card game called Sequence with my dad. And for Patrick Peterson, it's just very basic and sounds very enjoyable. He says, getting in the pool. Now, who would not enjoy getting into a nice, warm swimming pool? Say here in the month of January, oh boy, I'm starting to feel real good already. Next question, which song gets you pumped up to compete? Well, Ministress says Hot Dog by Dayglow. And Sebastian Corda likes I Watch Martin Garrix perform on YouTube. And Patrick Peterson, the song Landed by Drake. This is going to be a hard one for me. What is your go-to emoji? I'm just going to have to describe them because I don't know their names. Minna Stess likes a sunny face, you know, but the eyes and the mouth are just straight lines. So I guess that's just kind of neutral. Then Sebastian Corda, he's got two of them in his. One of them is a ghost, one eye closed, one eye open, and his tongue sticking straight out. I like that. And then next to it is a laughing emoji, and that emoji is laughing so hard that the tears are coming out of its eyes. And Patrick Peterson, he's going like, you know, the saying like, oh, no, or oh, my gosh, or I can't believe it. There's the person, and they're standing. They've got their hand up to their forehead covering one of their eyes, and it's like these. You go up, you put it on your head, and you go, oh, no. Okay. Last question. What sport would you like to go pro in besides your own? Ministress, the skateboarder, says gymnastics. And Sebastian Corda, the tennis player, hockey, because I played it until I was 11 years old. And Patrick Peterson, he must be getting awfully tired being knocked around on the football field because he said golf. Can't get much more casual than the game of golf. Now, I don't know how many of you like to drink coffee or if your parents will permit you to drink coffee. My parents would not. They told me if I drank coffee, it would stunt my growth. And you know what? They might have been right because I only got up to 5'7". So maybe I was destined for 6'2" tall. But no, that wouldn't work, would it? Because I didn't drink coffee. I didn't like it. In fact, I still don't. Nonetheless, a lot of people do. So, pouring it on, P-O-U-R-I-N-G, pouring it on, Jimmy Butler's Big Face Coffee was the breakout star of the NBA bubble. The secret to Miami Heat's Cinderella run this year to this year's NBA Finals? The French press. If that sounds like an exotic European version of the full court press, that's because, well, you're young. And you drink apple juice. Well, you're not that young, and you probably drink a lot of other things besides apple juice. It's actually a device that uses a plunger to brew coffee. Heat star Jimmy Butler packed his French press machine along with some other fancy coffee-making equipment before isolating in the NBA bubble in Florida. Quickly, he realized that he had a monopoly on premium Java and started a business. Big Face Coffee. The whiteboard menu outside of his hotel room went viral for his selection. 9 different coffee drinks. And it's confusing pricing. Small, medium, and a large cup. All. Every one of them. Same price, $20. Wow! That's pretty pricey. Butler's brand led to merchandise, a registered trademark, and a competitor. Little Face Coffee. From Miami assistant trainer Brandon Gilliam. I wonder maybe if Butler, as a basketball player, is up there about 6'5", 6'6", 6'7". And it may be that Little Face Coffee's owner, Brandon Gilliam, is down about 5'5", 5'6", kind of like me. Butler may be a beverage genius. Sneakers cost the same price no matter what size. Buying a bigger size does not give you a better value. It just makes your shoes not fit. The same logic might apply to a cup of Joe. Everyone has a different tolerance for caffeine. Nobody needs any more caffeine than it takes to get them awake. His policy of charging $50 for two small cups? We cannot explain that. But you never know when it comes to the NBA. We next have an article titled, Their Day in the Sun. California. Okay, Florida and California. Put the two words together, California. Their Day in the Sun. And there's a picture of the state of California on one side and an outline of the state of Florida on the other side. And what do we have? We have two columns here, one for each. For California, population 39,512,223 of your closest friends. Florida population, oh, they're not so good. They're third behind California's first place. They're third at 21,477,737 people. The record temperature for California, 134 degrees. Holy mackerel. And Florida, 109 degrees Fahrenheit. That's plenty warm enough for me. The state tree in California is the California redwood, those stately, big, old trees that have been around for hundreds of years. Wonderful. And the state tree in Florida is the palm tree. Very graceful, giving you some shade. Also gives you palms, if you want palms. The animal for California, the state animal, is the grizzly bear. Ooh, I want to stay away from him. And I want to stay away from the animal for Florida as well. It's the panther, that big black cat. Beautiful, beautiful animal, but a little scary. The Disney park, there's one in each state. In California, it's 500 acres in size. Sound big? Nah. Not at all. Look at Florida. Their Disney park, Disney World, is 40 square miles in size. That's big. SCOTY. I don't even know what SCOTY is. S-K-O-T-Y. Any of you folks know what that is? If you do, you're ahead of me. But for under SCOTY, for California, Juju Watkins. It looks like a female basketball player. And for Florida, Noah Flegel. And that appears to me to be some kind of a jazzed-up skateboard that's quite long. It may even have a handle on the end. Yeah, I never saw that one before. And then famous win over the other. Well, for California, it was the 2009 NBA Finals, the Lakers over the Magic. And for Florida, Super Bowl 32, the Bucks over the Raiders. Well, that gives you the outline. Now, what do they have to say here? Okay. Palm ball. Florida and California have dominated the big four pro leagues this past season. Is this the beginning of an Atlantic-Pacific rivalry or just a sunny distraction during an otherwise very dismal year? California and Florida have all the beaches, all the theme parks, and now apparently all the good sports teams. Does that seem fair? Are the rest of us supposed to go along with this because they have to live in mortal terror of bears and alligators, respectively? When the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays advanced to the World Series in October, it ensured that three post-pandemic championships would be won by a team from one of these two sunny states. It also represented the second straight L.A.-Florida matchup after the Lakers beat the Heat in the NBA Finals. It's almost too bad all three of the NHL's California teams are in the basement of the Pacific Division and could not challenge the eventual champion Tampa Bay Lightning for the Stanley Cup. This bi-coastal rivalry might not be done. With Tom Brady on the Buccaneers and the odds of a rubber game against the Rams in the NFC Championship are decent. The winner, of course, would advance to the Super Bowl to be held this season at, ready for it, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. Considering Texas's success this season, the Astros and the Stars, it's surprising that the country's three biggest states have not combined for a significant decline in TV ratings across sports. Maybe the rest of the country has been given a chance. Well, of course, we know what happened with the Bucks. The Bucks won against the Saints, so this coming weekend, we're heading for some more playoff activity. How about we stop in under the heading of trending for a visit with Fernando Tatis, or Tatis. I think maybe we'll go with Tatis. Fernando Tatis Jr. of the San Diego Padres. He's their shortstop. While leading the Padres back to the postseason, the 21-year-old slugger provided timely hitting, solid defense, and most importantly, in a difficult year, loads of fun. Emma Baccarelli gave us this article. This was not a fun baseball season. First, there was an ugly financial battle between players and owners who were unable to agree on a plan to return to the field during the COVID-19 pandemic. Much of the action on the field was a drag, too. A shortened season with scrambled schedules meant many stars never faced each other. Games were played with piped-in crowd noise to complement a sea of cardboard fans and seats filled with teddy bears. It was a novel environment, to be sure, but not a particularly fun one. And then there's Fernando Tatis Jr. It's rare for a player so young to be so talented, or a player so talented to be such a source of joy. It's especially rare for a player to be all three of those things. But that is Tatis, who has transformed into a superstar and shown that while his name may be familiar, there is no one like him. At age 21, he plays shortstop with an audacious energy and runs the bases with the same abandon. Watching him is like watching a highlight playlist set on shuffle on any given night. Tatis might offer a monster home run or a gutsy steal or a leaping catch, but there's always something. He redefines the term fantasy baseball player. It seems pointless to argue that he's the most exciting player in baseball because really, who needs to be convinced of anything so obvious? He just has the spirit of a 10 or 12-year-old, playing the best sport in the world, says Padres manager J.C. Tingler. And he does it with a swag, a confidence, and he has a blast. There are plenty of statistics to paint the picture of his explosive season. 17 home runs, second in the National League. 45 runs batted in just 59 games. Yet, Tatis' game is defined just as much by the sort of player he is aesthetically. He plays with a joy that is palpable. He's fun to watch because he's so openly interested in his idea of fun. He flips bats. He dances in the dugout after home runs. He accessorizes his uniform with neon shoelaces and headbands. Fun is not a side effect of his baseball. It is his baseball. This is, Tatis says, the way he's always played. He loves baseball too much to approach it any differently, a fondness that started with his father, Fernando Tatis Sr., who played 11 seasons in MLB. He showed me the passion for the game, the younger Tatis says of his dad. He showed me the love for the game. He showed me how to respect the game. But his talent is distinct from his father's. Asked whether he sees any similarities in their play, Tatis Sr. can only laugh. It's not even close. Junior is way, 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 way better. Though Tatis Sr. appeared in 800 more games than his son has so far, Tatis Jr. has already surpassed him in WAR, W-A-R. And Ateta Sr. notes that his son's style is all his own, too. I'm a calm guy. I like to watch the game. I like to be quiet, you know, says the elder Tatis. And Junior is, he just likes to have fun. He likes to talk, and he likes to feel free. That's his personality, on the field and off the field. Of course, having that much personality is going to rub some old-school baseball coaches, players, and fans the wrong way. In August, Tatis caused a stir for the crime of, gasp, swinging at a 3-0 pitch with the bases loaded and a sizable lead in the Padres against Texas. He hit a home run. Team Eric Hosmer scolded him in the dugout. Rangers manager Chris Woodward huffed, "I didn't like it." But then things took a twist. Woodward later walked back his frustration. "I can't really blame Tatis." Hall of Famer took Tatis' side. "We need players like you," Reggie Jackson tweeted. The conversation felt almost entirely one-sided. Everyone seemed to recognize the rising star of Tatis. What happens when baseball decides that a player is just too much fun for anyone to argue over? Well, you throw out the unwritten rules. Tatis, for his part, just kept going. "I'm just trying to play my game," he says. I don't know. People were talking, but I still came the next day and played the game that I love, and I played it the same way that I played it the night before. But Tatis is not here to make a statement or to change the game. He just wants to keep getting better. He wants to win, and all of that, he declares, should involve some joy. "This game is hard," says Tatis. "This game is tough. This game is it's going to come after you every single day. So, why not try to have some fun?" A sidebar on this story is Padres power. Tatis isn't the only reason that things are looking up for San Diego. Number one, Manny Machado, third baseman, in the second season of his massive 10-year, $300 million deal, gulp, the 28-year-old Machado hit .300 for the first time in his career and finished tied for third in the league with 16 homers, one behind Tatis. Number two for Padres power, Denelson Lamet, starting pitcher. After missing 2018 following elbow surgery, the 28-year-old had a breakout season on the mound in 2020. He averaged 12.1 strikeouts per nine innings with a 2.09 ERA. He missed the playoffs with an arm trouble, though. And number three, Trent Grisham, center fielder. The 24-year-old hit 10 homers, including one that irked the Dodgers when Grisham stood at the plate and admired it. "We respect the game, but we're going to have fun," manager J.C. Tingler said. Grisham also played a great defense, finishing sixth in the NL in defensive war. As we wind things up for today's edition of Sports Illustrated Kids, we've got a centerfold here. Aaron Donald is the player. He's a Los Angeles Rams defensive tackle. Here are the fast facts. Prior to the 2019 season, Donald's fellow NFL players voted him the top all-around performer in the league. He didn't disappoint, leading the lead in tackles for loss for the second straight year. Last April, he graduated from the University of Pittsburgh, where he played before being selected the 13th in the 2014 NFL Draft. Well, folks, we've come to the end of our program for today. We've run out of time. Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Dick Hayden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. She said, "Why?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I'm just a hell of a guy. But enough about me. Yo, let's talk about you."